We're going to continue looking at programs that use arrays. You remember from last time that an array is a data structure or a container, let's think of it that way, that can hold multiple values at one time, but they have to be homogeneous. All the values have to be the same. Each element of the array or each slot of the array has an index or a subscript which goes from 0 up to as many elements as you have in the array. And so what I want to do the following. Let's suppose we're going to have an election and there are 4 candidates for the election. And I want to create a voting machine that lets people come up and put in a number from 1 to 4. So each of you would come up. It would ask you, who do you want to vote for? From 1 to 4. And at the end, it will tell me who had the most votes, or how many votes each of the 4 candidates had. Now, let's think of how we would do this without arrays. If there were 4 candidates, I would have 4 counters. Candidate 1, candidate 2, candidate 3, and candidate 4. I would start all 4 candidates at 0. It's an honest election, so we'll start them all off with 0 votes. And then I will start a loop, and I will say, who are you voting for? And you'll say, let's say candidate number 3. And I'll say, okay, if vote equals 1, candidate 1 plus plus. Else, if vote equals 2, candidate 2 plus plus. Else, if vote equals 3, candidate 3 plus plus. Else, if vote equals 4, candidate 4 plus plus. And then I would go around to the next person, and the next person, and the next person. And each of you would put in your vote. We'd go through this if statement and add 1 to the appropriate candidate. Once we went through all the people who are voting, we would simply print out candidate 1 got how many votes, candidate 2 got how many votes, candidate 3, and candidate 4. Okay? That's how we would do it if we had no arrays. That's not too awkward of a situation. But let's say there were 10 candidates. Then you'd have to have 10 counters. And you would have to have a huge if statement. If vote equals 1, candidate 1 plus plus. Else if vote equals 2, candidate 2 plus plus. Else if vote equals 3, and so on and so forth for 10 candidates. That would be a very, very awkward situation. So we could do it, but the program would be long. And if this was a student election where there might be more than even 10, maybe there are 20 people running for an office, then the program would get worse and worse each time around. Instead, let's look at how we would solve that problem using arrays. You have a program called Election Tabulator. And this program will show us not only another example of using an array, but a way in which we can use an array to avoid the if statement altogether. Does everybody have this program in front of them? Let's run this program first. Let's run it just to show you what I want to do. So enter your choice as a number from 1 to 4, because we said there are, let's say, 4 candidates. So let's say you voted for candidate 3. Okay? Enter your choice of a number from 1 to 4. Somebody voted for candidate 3 also. Enter your choice of a number from 1 to 4. Someone voted for candidate number 1. Enter your choice number from 1 to 4. Someone voted for candidate 4. Enter your choice number. Someone voted for choice number 3. Finally, the election is over. We put in a 0. And it prints out candidate 1 received 1 vote. Candidate 2 received 0 votes. Candidate 3 received 3 votes. And candidate 4 received 1 vote. That's what I want to do. Okay, we want to create a simple program. Now, incidentally, the issue of creating electronic voting booths. All of you vote or do vote in the United States, in New York. You know that we use these machines that were the mechanical machines. Now, those machines have been around for 30, 40 years. Some states are looking now into replacing mechanical machines with computers, touch screens where you would touch. But there's a very big problem. As you know, your programs have bugs. It's very, very difficult to make sure that a program has no bugs, and also to make sure that someone's not cheating behind the scenes. And it's an extremely difficult problem to create a program, an honest, guaranteed honest, without bugs. Every one that they've done so far, either people have managed to crack them, or they've turned out that during the election it crashed and found bugs and things and so on. So there's a tremendous, it went to court already to throw out. There are some states that bought, you know, like 60,000 of these electronic ballot machines, and now the people went to court to have all these machines thrown out and go back to doing mechanical. In some states they write the vote in and so on. It's a very, practically it's a very, very difficult issue to create a verifiable election computer program. Eventually they'll go to it, but there's a lot of work that needs to be done to make sure that it's private, but yet that you can verify. So if someone demands a recount, in the old-fashioned way, at least there are papers that come, they can actually count the votes. Here, there's not, what are you going to do, count electrons? So it's very difficult to make sure that, to do this honestly. But we'll assume it's honest for now. Okay, let's write the program and see what we learn from here. So first of all, const int number of candidates equals 4. I want to do it this way so that if tomorrow there are 10 people who are running for office, I would just change this number to 10. And the rest of the program would work just the way it should. I have now variables, voter, not each of you is a voter, candidate, the one you choose, 1, 2, 3, or 4, and an array. Now look at the array. Count sub number of candidates. Remember what that does. It's going to create an array. How many slots is this array going to have? 4 slots. What are the slots going to be numbered? 0 through 3. Now, no candidate wants to be called candidate 0. Okay? They want to be called, you know, that sort of means you're a zero, which probably all 3 of them today are, but in any event, they don't like that. But I'm going to put the first candidate's votes here, the second one here, the third one here, and the fourth one here. So I'm going to always have to remember to shift these numbers by 1, so that candidate 1 gets put into slot 0, candidate 2 gets put into slot 1, and so on. So that'll be a little complication that we need to keep in mind. Now, the first thing we need to do, it's an honest election. What do you do with any counter? When you start a counter, what's the first thing you do with a counter? You initialize it to 0. If it's an honest vote, we're going to initialize everybody to 0. So let's see how we initialize. I need to say, for candidate equals 0, candidate is less than number of candidates, candidate plus plus, count subcandidate equals 0. And this was called count. So when candidate is 0, count sub 0 is 0. That puts a 0 in here. When candidate now becomes 1, count sub 1 is 0. That puts a 0 here. Then candidate becomes 2, count sub 2 equals 0. That puts the 0 here. And finally, candidate becomes 3, and count subcandidate, well, count sub 3 is 0. Notice this statement shows you how we initialize an array. You need a for loop. You need to step through each slot and put a value into it, which is what I just did. Okay, so we've now, in this point right here, we have done the first task. Started all the counters at 0. Next, we're now going to start the election. So we say, enter your choice as a number from 1 to number of candidates. In this case, from 1 to 4. Enter a 0 to stop. See in candidates. So I ask you for your vote. While candidate is greater than 0, and candidate is less than number of candidates, plus plus count sub candidate minus one. Does everyone see that candidate minus one, why it's there? Let's say you voted for candidate number one. In which slot do we want to put Ed 1-2? I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. Into slot zero, exactly. So you put in a one because you wanted to vote for candidate one. So one minus one is zero. So I'm talking about slot zero. And I'm adding one to that, plus plus. So that adds one to this, and now there's a one in here. The next person says, I want to, then we come around the loop again. I ask you, who do you want to vote for? And you tell me I want to vote for candidate number three. Well, if you want to vote for candidate number three, so you gave me the three right here, come around this loop, we're back to here, and therefore, which slot do I want to add one to if you voted for candidate number three? Three minus one. And that's why it says, plus plus count, candidate minus one. So I'm adding one to here. Does everyone see that? In other words, if you tell me a number from one to four, I want to convert it into a number from zero to three. And then I want to add one to that. And we go round and round and round as each of you vote. Eventually, you're done the vote, and you put in a zero, and I'm finished with the vote. Yes? You mean whether you put the plus plus here, or you put the plus plus there after this bracket? In this case, it would make no difference. Count sub candidate minus one bracket plus plus would be just as good as saying this, but this is needed because the plus plus is sort of closer to the count, which is what you're not adding. Don't want anyone to think that you're adding one to this. You're adding one to the slot in this array. So it's sort of more elegant to write it this way. Now we've finished the election and we want to print out messages. Now the message that we want to print out is we don't want to say candidate zero got one vote. We want to say candidate one got one vote. So we want to do reverse. I'm going to now say, for candidate equals zero, candidate less than number of candidates, C out, candidate, candidate plus one. So when the first time through the loop, when candidate is zero, this will print out candidate one, received, count sub zero, votes. So it would print out, candidate one received one vote. And so on as we go through each of these messages. Okay? So we've seen two things here. First of all, we see how to do an array. But very important. This statement here takes the place of that big, huge if statement. Instead of having to say, if vote equals equals one, add one here. Else, if vote equals equals two, add one here. Else, if vote equals equals three, add one there. By you supplying me your vote and using that to select which slot, I'm not using any if statements at all. So I've solved the problem of having multiple variables, and I've also solved the problem of not having a huge, ugly-looking if statement, like simply choosing which slot based on who you voted for. Okay? Any questions? Now, let's just talk a little bit more about some properties about an array. First of all, if you want to initialize an array, as you saw in this example, you need to have a for loop. You can't simply say count equals zero. That's illegal. Because count is the name of the entire array, and it has brackets here, so you need to say for I equals zero, I less than max, whatever that is, I plus plus, count sub I equals zero. So to initialize an array, you need to do it element by element. And that's the way arrays are normally initialized. But there's another form one can do. Just as when one says int x equals 17, which remember creates a variable x and puts 17 into it, if we say int y sub 5, which remember creates an array with 5 slots numbered 0 through 4. And then you say equals, and let's say you say 0, 1, left a blank, 2. Suppose you did that. What this would do is it would create an array with, as you said, 5 slots. It would put a 0 into here. It would put a 1 into here. It would put nothing into here. It would put a 2 into here. And it would leave this one blank also because we didn't give it enough values. So you could also initialize an array using this method, although it's very awkward to do it this way when you can do something like this and initialize the whole array with one little statement like this. But you should know that this is possible. It will initialize them one per slot. If you leave something out, it will leave it blank. But you need a comma to leave it blank. And if you didn't give it enough, it just doesn't do as many as you give it. Okay? We're now going to look at a program that combines the use of arrays and character processing. Suppose I have a file which contains some story in it, maybe the Gettysburg Address. And I want to know how many uppercase letters of each type there are. In other words, I want to print a nice message. Capital A, 30 of them. Capital B, 40 of them. Capital C, 0, and so on. For each of the letters of the alphabet, I want to count uppercase letters in a file. Look at the program called Count Letters. It should be the next one. Now, before we look at the program, again, to give you an idea of what this does, the file, original file.txt, you have a copy of. That's the Gettysburg Address that we've been using all along. And what I'd like to do is run this program, and this is what I want it to produce. I want it to produce a nice, cute-looking table that has 105 A's, 16 B's, 32 C's, 22 U's, 0 Z's, and so on and so forth. That's my results. Now, there are several problems that we have to attack here. First of all, if we're going to count the uppercase letters, how many counters do we need? 26. Of course, by now we realize we're not going to have 26 separate counters. We're not going to have an array, a variable called counter A, counter B, counter C, and so on. That would be very awkward. Instead, we'll have a single array that has 26 slots, so that it'll be numbered from 0 through 25. So the letter A will be, just as we just did with the election, we'll put that in slot 0. The letters B, we'll add them up in slot 1, and so on and so forth. So we're going to solve the problem of by having an array of 26 slots. And the first thing we're going to do with the array is what? When you're counting something, the first thing you're going to do is initialize them to all to 0. Just as we did for I, we'll do for I equals 0 through 25, initialize everything to 0. So that's step 1. The next step should also be pretty easy by now. We're going to open the file. We're going to process the file a character at a time until there are none left. We know how to do that. I've given you that code over and over again. We're going to read a character. If it's an uppercase character, we're going to add 1 to the slot that that character represents, and then go read the next character. We ignore the lowercase characters or anything else. And we just do this a character at a time. We read a character, check to see if it's an uppercase character. If it is, we'll add 1 to the counter, and we'll go round and round and round and round until there are no characters left. So we can do that. This is no difference than the election, except instead of electing people, what we're doing here is we're looking at characters and counting how many letters of the alphabet there is, or there are. Once we've done that, when we reach the end of the file, then we simply want to print out all the numbers in the array. Now that poses a little bit of a problem, because we want to print out a very nice table. In other words, what I want to print is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 columns per line. And each one should have A colon with a number, B colon with a number. And I want everything to be nicely lined up. So we have a problem of how to print pretty looking tables, which is a separate issue, which we'll get to in a moment. Some tricks I'll show you to print this table out nice and neat in formatting. But those are going to be then the steps. We'll create our array. Step one, the array is going to have 26 slots. Step two, we're going to initialize everything to zero. Step four, we're going to open up the file, read it a character at a time until there are no characters left. Look at the character. If it's an uppercase letter, add one to the appropriate slot. Now, remember, if it's the letter A, I want to add one to which slot? Zero. If it's the letter B, I want to add one to which slot? One. Now, I have to show you how to do that. That's a trick. There's a neat little trick. We can do that. Keep that in mind. Hold that thought. When we get there, I'll show you how that's done. We do this for all the characters in the file. Finish. Now we're ready to print out the array and make it look pretty. Those are the issues of how we do this program. So if you understand that, let's look at the steps. First, we're going to create our array. I'm going to call the array letter, and it has 26 slots, and it is an integer because it's going to be we're counting things, and its slots are going to be from 0 through 25. That's the first step. The next step is I will open the file, check to make sure I was able to open it. We've done that over and over again, so now I'm up to here. The next step was to do what? Was to set all the counters to zero. Well, that is trivial now. For I equals zero, I less than 26, plus plus I, letter sub I equals zero. That plunks a zero into each slot from 0 through 25. Any questions about that? Very straightforward. The next step was to read a character one at a time from the file until there are none left. Check to see if it's an uppercase letter. And if it's an uppercase letter, add one to the right slot. So let's do that. Look at this little piece of code right here. Whoops, right there. Okay. While not in file.eof and c equals in file.get, what does that do? It reads a character one at a time until there are none left. That's the C idiom that we've been using over and over again. Okay, does everyone recognize that? That statement says, while we haven't reached the end, while not EOF, pick up a character, put it into C, and go on. So we pick up the first character. And then I say, if is alpha C, actually what I'm doing here is a little bit different than I described. What I'm doing is I'm counting how many letter A's there are, whether they're uppercase letters or lowercase A's. How many letter B's there are, uppercase B's or lowercase B's. So I'm saying like this. If is alpha C, if the character you just picked up is a letter of the alphabet, remember is alpha C is one of the functions that were declared in, remember the C type library that we saw before. If you look at that list that I gave you, one of the functions that are in there is called isAlpha, and that tells me true if you're a letter A through Z, uppercase or lowercase, and false if it's anything else, a punctuation mark, a digit, or anything else. So, going back to our logic, right here. If isAlpha C, if the character you just picked up is one of the alphabetic characters, there are two possibilities. It's uppercase or it's lowercase. If it's uppercase, well, it's uppercase. If it's lowercase, I want to turn it into an uppercase letter. So if is alpha C, C equals two upper C. What does that do? It takes the character, and if it's a lowercase letter, it turns it into an uppercase letter. And if it's an uppercase letter, it doesn't do anything to it. Because it already is an uppercase letter, yes. Because I want to count how many letter A's there are, whether they are uppercase or lowercase. So I'm going to turn a lowercase letter into an uppercase letter, and then I'm going to decide which slot to put it into. So even a lowercase a, which is ASCII 97, is now being turned into uppercase A, which is ASCII 65. Okay, so let's say we picked up the letter A. After this statement, C contains an uppercase letter A, whether it was an uppercase letter A or not before, right? So C is now an uppercase A. Now, if it's an uppercase A, which slot did I want to put it into? Slot zero. Exactly. Well, how do I take an uppercase A and turn it into a zero? Well, think. Uppercase A is 65. If I subtract 65 from it, that will be zero. So when I say plus plus letter C minus this, if C was an A, then 65 minus 65 is zero. And that will put a 1 into my, let's see, what do we have now? Now we have a bigger thing. We have, this goes all the way down to 25. And we started out with zeros everywhere. So now, if I picked up an A, again, if C contains a capital A, it will be capital A minus capital A is zero. 65 minus 65 is zero. And I'll add 1 here. Okay. We come around the loop and we get another character. Let's say this time the character happens to be the letter B. Okay? If it's an alphabetic character, the letter B is, turn it into an uppercase B. Whether it was uppercase or lowercase, now it's a B. What does this statement now say? B minus A. What is B? 66. What is A? Which is altogether, which adds 1 to this slot. See how it works? Trick. Let's say we come around again. And this time we pick up the letter Z. Whether it was uppercase or lowercase, now it's a uppercase. Z is what number? I don't really care. Z minus A, that you do know what it is. What is that going to be? 25. And if you don't trust me, look it up. What happens to, well, you have the chart there. What is Z? Look it in the back of the book. You don't have to do it now, but look it up. You'll see. Obviously, if A is 65, Z must be 26 characters later. So therefore, Z minus A must be 25. And I'll add 1 here. So using this little trick over here, okay, that will always, if you give me an alphabetic character, tell me which slot to add it into, to add 1 into. Does anyone see that? A little trick for working with characters. And it's that type of trick, although you're not going to be using arrays in the assignment I just gave you, but it's that trick of treating characters like numbers that assignment, the key, is going to use. We're not using arrays in this. This assignment has no arrays. You don't need an array. So right away, put that in your mind. You don't need an array for the assignment I just gave you. Yes? What? For what? For the assignment? You may need that. Call by value and call by reference? You might need that. Think about when you write your... You may or may not. Write your functions, as I describe, and see whether they need to change the value of the parameters or not. I think not, actually. But think about it. Okay, so we do this. Now, of course, if we pick up a question mark or a period, what happens there? We skip it. We just go on and get the next one. So we've done the next task. The next task was to read the characters one at a time until there were none left. If they're an uppercase letter, add one to the appropriate slot. And I did this all without an if statement. Okay? This takes the place of a big if statement to decide what slot to put it into. Just like the election did in the previous program. Now all we're ready, we've done this. So we've got all the numbers already in the slots. And we want to print it out very nice and neat. Let me remind you what nice and neat means. So I'm going to run it again. And I'm going to, adjust this. So you see this. And you see this. Oops, let's move this up a little bit. So we want to make this happen. Okay. How many things are we going to print? First of all, let's answer that question. How many different things are we printing? 26. Because there are 26 slots. So I'm going to say for I equals 0, I less than 26 plus plus I. Correct? Okay, now let's think. The first thing I need to decide as I go through this loop 26 times, is it time to start a new line? Right? Now, I actually showed you this trick once before, but let's look at it again. We decided, or I decided, that we wanted to print 6 items on a line. That means the 6th item, and the 12th item, and the 18th item, and the 24th item, each should have a new line right afterwards. Okay? So, how do we do that? Well, how do you know if something is the 6th, 12th, 18th, 24th, 30th, 36th, and so on? What do all those numbers have in common? That when you divide them by 6, the remainder is 0. So by saying, if I mod 6 equals equals 0, see out end line, that little loop is your trick for printing things every 6 on a line. So suppose I wanted to print, we decide that I want to print 10 things per line. How would I change this? All I would do is I would change this to 10 and recompile. And now it's 10 things per line, but there are too many things on a line, so it looks real ugly, so it wrapped around. So 10 was a bad number, which is why I didn't use it in the first place. Let's try, suppose we wanted 4 things per line. So every 4th item. Very pretty. Every 4th item. Okay? So let's go back to 6, just so that the next time around, it'll be here. So this little trick, this line here, let's put this back up there. This little trick, that line, is the way you make decisions of how something is every 6th item, every 10th item. Whenever you have to make some kind of a choice like that, use this mod thing, and it easily tells you whether it's the 6th thing, the 18th thing, the 12th thing, and so on and so forth, or any other number you choose. So we took care of that part of it. Next thing, what do we want to do? We want to make sure that each item that's printed, this thing, and then this thing, and then this thing, and then this thing, and then this thing, and so on, is in a column of 5 spaces. So if I drew, remember in kindergarten or in first grade, the teacher told you to take and make lines on your paper, and then you'd put spelling words or something on in each column on the paper? Something to that effect, okay? What we want to do is we want to tell the printout to print things in spaces of 5, which we've never done before. When we said see out, it just printed the very next thing over. Now I want to say each item that you print should be in a space of 5. And so I use the command width, new command, see out dot width 5. Now, this command has to be used each time over again before the thing you print. You can't just say it once and it'll you do it forever. So the first thing I wanted to print was the letter A, that's correct, followed by a colon. So what I did was I told the computer, see out width 5. Width is a method, another method. And what that does, if this is my margin, it makes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 spaces. And then the thing that we're going to print, which is going to be the letter A, we'll get to that in a moment, is going to print here. When you use the width command, it right justifies. That means it puts the thing in at the rightmost in whatever space you said. If you said width 6, it would put it in the sixth one over. Does everyone get that? Now, there's a way of making it print on the left side. Your textbook will tell you about that. You have to say the command left, but we'll talk about that a little later on. Now, forget about how I got the letter A to print for a moment, because it doesn't say the letter A here. The very next thing, I'll get back to this in a moment. The very next thing I tell it to print is a colon. Now, the width does not apply to this. It applies only to the first thing that you print. And I'll get back to this in a moment. Okay? So because this does not apply to this, that prints, as usual, the very next thing over. The next thing that it's going to say is see out that width again. Right away, it immediately puts another 5 spaces like that. And then when I tell it, see out, write letter I. Now, what is I? I right now is 0, because we're doing the first one. Letter I is, there was one letter, A. And so it will print the number 1 over there. Now, I still didn't tell you how we print the letter A itself, but we'll get to that in a moment. Let's come around the loop again. So I'm up to the loop again. I now becomes 1. This is not true, so I'll skip it. See out with 5. So it prints another 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And then it says, see out right this. And I'll show you in a moment, that causes the letter B to be printed. The next thing is the colon. That is not affected by the width, because the width is only the next one. Very important to remember, it's not a setting like precision. When you use precision, once you set it, it remained. Width only applies to the very next thing that's printed. So the colon is not affected by the width. So that's going to print the B here. The next space over. Then we get C out width 5 again. Another 5 spaces. And C out right letter I. I now was, remember, a 1. There's a 1 in here. And so we print out the 1. Okay, now there's 2 things for me to now explain. One is, how did I get the letter A or the letter B to print? Hold that thought. Let's just go back to the concept of width. You can specify any number that you want. That prepares a column that many spaces. And if you say the word right before it, whatever you're going to send is going to be printing in the, as we did here, to the right side. But if you say the letter left over here, then it would have put the A over here. But the colon would still be here, far away from the letter A. Because why? We said width 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That reserved a column of 5 for whatever you're printing. You told it to put it on the left. So it did. And the next thing over is going here. Because that's not what I wanted. I want the A to follow the colon. Then I do this. Okay. Now, actually, we need to turn, figure out now, how do we print A's and B's? Well, this is the reverse trick of the trick that we use to decide what slot. When I is 0, I wanted to print out the character corresponding to the number 65. When I is 1, I wanted to print out the character corresponding to the number 66. Right? So, the reverse trick. Remember, capital A is always 65. So when I is 0, this means 65 plus 0 is 65. That's a number. I don't want to print out the number 65. I want to print out the letter that corresponds to the number 65. So I want to convert the number 65 into the character corresponding. That's why I have the char over here. Okay, remember that's called a cast, C-A-S-T. It converts this into a character. What do you think would happen if I left out this word here? How would that affect what would print? It would print 65-105, 66-16, 67-32. Because if you tell it to print a number, it's going to print a number. You want to print the character corresponding to that number, so I need to cast it. And so this works. Are there any questions about this program? Again, please take this program home. I mean, you have it. And go through it until you understand what's going on in there. Because being playing around with this type of character processing is essential for you to know. It's on the test, of course. It's also on the assignment. Now, arrays then give us the potential for storing large amounts of information. For example, I might have a big array with all your names in it, another big array with all your homeworks, your first homework assignment grades, another array with your second homework assignment grades, and so on and so forth. Okay? Arrays allow us to store large amounts of information and give you a single name. Like here, I'm using the name letter to refer to all 26 slots. Before we move on to looking at more C++, we need to introduce a few terminologies that deal with the manipulation and storage of large amounts of information. The science, or the mathematics, the computer science area that deals with large amounts of information is called database. A database is a collection of information that you wish to manipulate somehow or other. It might be, for example, all the students' transcripts in the college. It might be all the personnel information of the people who work here. It might be all the inventory of products that a company carries. Information is extremely important. Anything you do today deals with information. Even money is information, because money, what is really money? Money is just what the bank says you have in your account. That's information. There's no real dollar bill sitting there corresponding to your bank account. Everything in the world today deals with information. Without information, without being able to manipulate, without being able to search, eBay, whatever you're doing, shopping online, shopping in a real store, credit cards, everything deals with information. So this is a very, very important topic. It's a specialization, and people who are database managers make a lot of money. There is a course called Database Design, both on the undergraduate level, CAS 45, and on the graduate level as well. It's an extremely important topic, which we're going to look at only very, very briefly. So I need to introduce some terminology. Suppose I wanted to find out information about all of you, to maintain information. Well, I do. I want to keep track of your names. I want to keep track of your email address. I want to keep track of maybe your date of birth. Maybe I want to keep track of your phone number, so on and so forth. The first thing I need to decide is which kind of information I want to store on each person. So we said a name, a date of birth, a grade. So I take a piece of paper and I make a form, name, and I leave a blank line. A date of birth, leave a blank line, and so on and so forth. Each of those items is called a field. So a field is an elementary item. It's the smallest item in the database. Now, it's not so simple to make these decisions. First of all, when I said I want to store your name, well, is that one field, or do I have to have a separate field for last name, or a separate field for first name, and maybe another field for middle initial? That's a decision I need to think about. When I have a field for phone number, do I need to keep a field separate for area code and separate for phone number, or can I put that all in one field? When I say I want to have a field for zip code, should I say that the zip code field is all numbers, or can it contain letters? Well, if you're in Canada, they have letters in their zip code fields. So we have to decide, am I going to have any customers or students from Canada? So learning how to decide, how I break up the information, there's a lot of information about you out there. How do I break it up into little pieces depends in many ways on what I want to do with the information later on. And I'm not going to talk about that whole topic right now at all, because that's a very complicated topic, and we leave that for a database course. Now, each of you gets a piece of paper, or you sit in front of a computer and do it electronically, and you have a form that contains all the fields for you to fill out. That's called a record. A record is a collection of fields. Now, everybody in this class would have the same record. The information inside would be different. And some of you would have a middle initial, you'd fill it out, and some of you, you'd leave the middle initial field blank. But everyone in this class would have the same record with different information filled in. You're all filling out the same form. Now I collect those sheets of paper from each of you, and now I have a collection of records for this class. That's called a file. So a file is a collection of records. Each record is a collection of fields. Now, I'm not the only one that's storing information on you. The bursar has another whole file. They have different records on each student with different fields in it. And the registrar has another file which contains records for all the students in the college, and their records look different. And the personnel office in the college has a file on all the faculty members, and their records look different from each other. In other words, so we have a collection of files, file 1, file 2, file 3, and so on. And a collection of files is called a database. Now, first of all, somehow or other we've got to figure out, when I want information on you, I may have to take the record that I'm storing on you and combine it with the information on all the other cases that you've taken that the registrar has. So how do I relate a record in my data, in my file, with a record that the registrar might have? Or the bursar might need to know where to send you a bill, but they need to know how many courses you're registered for. Each of that information is stored in a separate file. How do we make sure that you get your bill and not his bill? What do we use to relate records in different files, but yet referring to the same individual? What do they use in the college? What uniquely identifies you? Not your last name, not your first name, but it can't even be the last four digits. They only show you the last four digits, social security number, for privacy reasons. But if there's only four, if you only had four digits and go from 0 to 9, the most it would be was 10,000. 10 times 10 times 10 times 10, and there are more than 10,000 students in the college. So they have to use, they use your entire social security number, but they only display the last four for privacy. In any event, whatever it is, social security number. For example, how does a company know which magazines you get? You have a customer, a subscription code. That field that identifies your record from other records is called a key. A key identifies a record in one, identifies a particular record. So a key sort of provides the connection between all the different files Because we can look up your record in my file. We can look up with the same key in the registrar's file, the same key in the bursar's file, the same key in the nurse's file, and find all the information that connects to you. The fact that the key allows us to tie in all the records that relate to you, no matter where they're stored, that's called a relationship, a database relationship. Now, let's think what we would do with all this information. What do I do with information? So, I have all this information. Think of an application. What would I want to do with it? You come up to me and say, what grade do I have to get on the final in order to get an A? What's the first thing I need to do? Find all the information that is relates to you. In other words, you have to tell me, I ask you, what is your social security number? And I type it into the computer, and somehow or other it's got to find your information. Let's say you call up your bank, and you say, I want to move my funds from one account to another account. What do they need to do first? Find your account. Find, out of all their millions of customers, find your account. You go on to online shopping. You have an account in some store, and you want to buy a certain product. First, they have to search their inventory to see whether or not they have the product available and what the price is. Then they have to search your account, merge the information, ship it to you, add money to use that account number to deduct money from the MasterCard bill. In other words, probably the most common application that's done with a database, in fact, almost every application, involves searching. Searching, obviously, you provide a key, something by which I want to search. When you go to the library, you want to get a book, the title of the book, that's by which you're searching for. And then somehow or other finding it. Now, if there's just a few things on your shelf, let's say you're looking for a few books. You have a book you're looking for, and about 10 books on your shelf. It's pretty easy to find it, right? You just walk up to the book and you find it. But if you were in a library and you had 100,000 books and you were looking for a book, there's got to be a method, a more efficient method than just look for it, go out there and look for it in order to find it. So what we need to talk about is how to do searching. How to search. Because one of the things we're going to do with arrays, we're going to have an arrays with large amounts of items into it. And we're going to say, find the grade of the second test that you took. I've got to search through all my students till I find that information. How does one do this efficiently? This also involves how you find, okay, something in your messy teenager room. Now, your mother tells you, well, if you'd clean the room every once in a while, you'd have a much easier time finding anything there. And you answer back, but it's too much trouble to clean. And I will only have to look for this book once and never again. Once the term assignment is over, I don't want to find this book again. So I'm not going to take the trouble to clean. I'll just take the trouble to search a little bit more inefficiently. Notice there's a trade-off. If you take the trouble to clean your room or to organize things on the shelf or sorting the books in the library by alphabetical, whatever system we want to use, it makes it much easier to find. But that takes effort. So there are going to be different searching strategies that we're going to apply, which depend on how things are organized. For example, if the Manhattan phone book was all jumbled, all the names and phone numbers were all jumbled in there, and you had to look for someone's phone number, there's really only one technique you can use. Start at the beginning until you find the one you want. It may take you forever to do it because there are some 8 million names in there. On the other hand, since the phone book, the phone company took the trouble to sort the names, there is a much better method of doing it. We'll talk about what that better method is, which you might think you know, but you don't. But the better method, the much more sufficient method of finding things in the phone book. Okay? So again, depending on the organization, we will have to talk about different strategies for searching. Clearly, when I talk about the phone book, the method of organizing would be some kind of sorting. In the same way in the library. Okay, the books are sorted on the shelf. By what are they sorted? Not by author's name. What are they sorted by on the shelf? No. Either Dewey Decimal System or the more modern Library of Congress number, which is what they use here. The numbers that are printed on the spine of the book. Now, of course, nobody goes around memorizing, oh, I want to read book number 1, 2, 3, 4, 7, 8. That's not the way you say, I want to read the following book by the following author. So what you do is, you look it up in a computer, it tells you what number, then you go to the shelf, and you find. Okay? The computer is serving as what we call an index. Okay? It's an indirect way, because the books are organized by one set of numbers, which you hardly ever use. Now, you know the way to steal books from the library to make sure they're always there for you when you want them. Very simple. Let's say there's a book you always want to study from, but you want to make sure nobody else takes out. All you do is you go to the shelf, you take the book, and you move it to another shelf, put it somewhere. The book, you're not walking out of the library. The book is still there. They can't accuse you of stealing. But until the next time the librarians come around, which is very rare, and make sure all the numbers are on the right shelf, nobody else will ever be able to find that book. It's as good as gone. In other words, how important sorting is to being able to find the information. If the books are not sorted, even if they're there, you'll never be able to find them. Like your messy room. Okay? So next class, we will devote time talking about searching algorithms, methods, and we'll talk about sorting methods. Because we're going to very often want to sort our arrays into some order, alphabetically, numerically, and so on. See you next class.